Welcome to the first ever edition of the Upshot subscriber-only bonus segment. We're so glad to be here with you. Thank you so much for being a subscriber, an early adopter here with us on the Upshot. I'm Charlie Eisenhood. He's Jamie Thomas. Jamie, are you excited?
I am so very excited because our first ever one of these segments, I mean, we're talking about early adopters. You have to start with Matt Krueger and UDisc, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We continue our conversation today with Matt Krueger after talking to him on the show last week. Matt, welcome back. Thanks for being here with us.
Thanks. It feels like forever since we last talked.
You know, this is a chance for us to go a little bit deeper into some things. And I saved a few questions from the show last week, and hopefully you can offer up some Easter eggs, some goodies for people, for maybe things that are not even yet on the public radar about UDisc. But I kind of want to start with this. What have been some of the highs and lows of starting a company in disc golf? I'm like really interested sort of in, and maybe you could get this from my questions last week, in like running a business in disc golf that's not a manufacturer, you know? What have been some moments that you look back on and say, wow, that was so awesome? And what have been some of the hard moments? Are there times when you doubt the project or the, you know, working all the hours that you work? I guess just some insight there would be awesome.
Yeah, I got to hand it to you. Nobody's asked us that before. there's been tons of highs and definitely tons of lows. I would say, let's start with the depressing one first. So the lows, like I said on the last week's podcast, you know, we've been working tons and tons of hours for a long time. And at the beginning, you know, it was 80 or 100 hours a week for very, very, very little pay. And never knowing, you know, if what we were doing was ever going to pay off. So that was very tough at the beginning to convince your significant other that it's a good use of your time outside of work to, you know, hole up in your computer room and type code all day. you know, beyond that, there's just always a lot of uncertainty when you're starting a company, like, is this actually going to pay off someday? Is this going to be something that people actually use? And just simple things like, I'm sure that you can, that anybody that's listening can commiserate with this. You know, you'll get like a 1-star review that at the beginning, it's very hard to not take things personally. So somebody will say, like, the best example of this is, I love this app so much. It's great. It does this and this and this and this, but it doesn't do this. 1-star. And I'm sure you've gotten reviews like that for your podcast too. And like, it's just one of those things that when you're new to, you know, running a business, it's so hard not to take that stuff personally and get really defensive and be like, you know, hey, we worked really hard on this. Like, why don't you like it? But over time you get thick skin and you learn that, well, hey, you know, the best way to go about this is to actually help them. You know, provide them help, give them an answer, you know, help them figure out what they're trying to do and get them to that, you know, to that point where they enjoy using the app and they realize that they can reach us and talk with us and have that conversation and that we're here if they need something. And so there's been a lot of learning, and I kind of turned that low into a high. You see what I did there? but so to answer the whole question, the highs, I think the highest highs we've had have been just kind of seeing the enjoyment that people get out of using the app and sharing scorecards on social media and playing rounds with their friends and, you know, keeping stats and then bragging, you know, like, oh, I'm a better Circle One X putter than you are. And just kind of seeing it like foster that camaraderie between disc golfers. It's been super cool to watch people adopting the app and to see it being used in other countries, all around the world, and getting emails from people in New Zealand and just that kind of stuff. Like, it's super rewarding to watch people enjoy something that you built. It's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like our baby. Like, it's out there, and watching people get enjoyment out of it is just really gratifying.
So we were talking about the lows that I was going through, and I'm looking through your iTunes reviews right now. I was trying to find some like 1-stars that I could read, but I haven't found any incredibly funny ones yet. Most of it is like literally just people not understanding how to basically use the app. And then like the developer note is actually here's how you do that.
Yeah. Well, and that's pretty common too. Like those 1-star reviews, you really, you know, at least me personally, like they don't really bug me because, you know, if somebody often when something is a 1-star review, it's probably because, you know, they couldn't figure something out and they got frustrated. And so they just decided to write that. And so our philosophy with that is just help them, you know, help them figure out what they're trying to do. And if you do a good job, maybe they'll change it to a 5-star review.
Well, that's probably a good way to go about it, considering on the App Store alone, you know, so only Apple products, you have over 12,000 ratings. And I mean, it's like 90 something percent 5-stars. So it's you got a pretty good app on your hands there, Matt. You can tell Josh said that too.
We have tried hard to keep it good. And yeah, I think if you want to see any funny reviews, you'd have to go back a few years, probably back to the beginning when it, you know, was still in its infancy and wasn't quite as polished as it is now.
All right. So we're talking about some low times here. And obviously, we were talking on the show last week. High point is you got married during the process of standing up this app and, you know, unveiling it to the disc golf world. So that's a very positive thing. But you said you had to basically elope or kind of like run away to get married. Does that mean you haven't gone on the honeymoon yet in all these 80 to 100 hour weeks?
Yeah, that is a very correct assumption.
Oh, man.
So we're very untraditional and we didn't really want to do, you know, a big wedding or anything like that. So we actually just snuck off to Colorado. And they have some really cool laws there where you can actually marry yourselves. You don't need an officiant. So we hiked up into the mountains in Rocky Mountain National Park up at like 11,000 feet and found a really cool spot by a lake and signed a sheet of paper. It was quite fun.
Wait, that's the most Colorado thing I've ever heard in my life.
You don't need
an officiant.
Yeah, so at least as of 2017 when we did that, there were three states that allowed you to do something like that. I think it was Colorado, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin maybe, I think what it was. But Colorado seemed like the best place to go to get some good scenery, so that's what we picked.
I also did a self-uniting ceremony at my wedding last year in September in Pennsylvania.
Oh, wow. Well, then I wasn't wrong about the state, huh?
Yeah, that's correct.
Wow.
Part of the Quaker tradition is that you can do a self-uniting ceremony. Now, we sort of had a officiant. I mean, it wasn't like a state-ordained, like, you know, you are able to marry people. But, like, we had more of a traditional wedding than you. A lot more of a traditional wedding than you. But we still did the self-uniting thing. So, I think I love that. It's a very cool thing to do.
Yeah, it was definitely cool for us. And like, I don't know, a lot of people have, you know, their own beliefs and opinions and whatnot. But like for us, it was about us and it wasn't about anybody else. And so we were able to justify that. And then it was kind of fun to come back after because we didn't even tell our family. They knew we were engaged, but we didn't tell them what we were going to do. And it was kind of cool to come back and be like, we're married.
Is it hard at all to deal with all the travel and obviously time that you're working just in terms of like being home? And, you know, being with your wife and seeing your friends and or do you feel like you still get enough of that time even with all of the work you're doing with UDisc?
Well, so traveling, just to clarify, like I don't go to every single tournament. In past years, like in 2016, the first year of the Pro Tour, I did go to every Pro Tour tournament. But if you don't remember, the Pro Tour was only 5 events or 6 events that year. So that wasn't too bad. In the past few years, I've really only gone to like the really big tournaments. I've gone to USDGC the last couple of years and Worlds the last couple of years and went to Las Vegas Challenge the last 2 years. So I only went to maybe like NGDO. So I went to like 4 or 5 in 2019. So the traveling part really hasn't been too bad. It's more just the, you know, the long hours working. But the nice thing is my wife and I actually both work from home. So we're together, you know, all day while we're working. And it's not necessarily quality time, but you know, we can sit on the couch together and work and get paid, which is, you know, kind of nice to have that flexibility and then get up and make lunch together and go back to work and kind of have that, which is, it's nice. And then when I do need to travel, it's not the end of the world. It's sometimes nice to get out of my house since I'm here all the time.
I feel that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something I deal with too from home, like that cooped up feeling sometimes, like you got to get out and do something. Like sometimes I'm just getting out and like, hey, I'm going to go drive and like buy lunch instead of making lunch at home just to get out for a minute. So
I hear you on that. Yeah, going to the grocery store over lunchtime is like the most exciting thing in the world to me. But I'm not that lame. It's just when you're working at home, there's a lot of advantages, but there's also a lot of, you know, things you have to deal with. You have to be very self-disciplined, and you have to make sure that you're getting to your desk at a reasonable hour and not just like going downstairs and watching TV until 10 in the morning or something. And but it's not really that hard as long as you're motivated and you have fun stuff to work on. There's definitely some days when it's like, oh, I have to do taxes all day. And
I feel that too.
Actually, Josh is in town right now. And so yesterday we spent, you know, 5 or 6 hours working on taxes, and not the most fun thing in the world, but hey, we're almost done. So makes you feel good when you get done. But yeah, that was just bringing up the point of, if you have fun stuff to work on, it's easy to be motivated. And usually what we're working on is pretty fun. So not too bad.
What percentage of people with UDisc are subscribed to your pro service? Do you know that answer?
I actually don't. You know, at times we've tried to figure that out, but it's not really a number that we've tracked too much. We probably should. It's worth noting that, like, I know we've said this many places before, but we've never really been doing this for money. You know, Josh and I were both engineers working for big companies before we started doing this, and we were making good salaries. We kind of just wanted to do something more fun and be our own bosses and that sort of thing. So, you know, tracking conversion rates and all that stuff is definitely something that, you know, most people that are trying to purely just, you know, make money would be really obsessing over. But for us, it's more just about giving people a good experience and providing people useful tools. So unfortunately, I don't know the answer to that.
Well, it's crazy to me, dude, because right now, the skill set that you and Josh have is hot. Like, if you come out to where I live, you make a ton of money or a ton of stock options that turn into astronomical amounts of money if you play the cards right out here. So, like, I guess it's just a further, like, feather in your cap, at least from me, because you're somebody that has a highly valuable skill set at this point in history, and you are doing it for disc golf, which, yeah, look, nobody got into this game to make money in disc golf unless you're a disc manufacturer at this point. Like, let's be real. Or Paul Macbeth. But who even saw that coming outside of him 5 years ago? It's interesting.
It's very true. But I always look at it as, you know, somebody had to do it for disc golf, and we were the right people. And we were crazy enough to work so many hours for no pay for many, many years to get to the point where we are now. And it's, you know, it didn't come easily. Let's be clear. Like, this was not something that just happened and just became successful. You know, there's a lot of very intentional things that we've done and, you know, we are disc golfers, and we know a lot, you know, all of our friends are disc golfers. My whole social media feed is nothing but disc golf. So, like, we eat, sleep, and breathe this thing. And it just, you know, somebody had to do it, and I'm really glad that it was us, but it didn't just happen.
Do you feel like you've gotten to the point where it's, you know, as long as you continue to keep it up to date and you try to add new features that you know, it's going to remain successful? Or are you worried that somebody could try to replicate what you do, make a different app, that the way that live scoring is treated changes and affects your company? I hear what you're saying about, you know, not doing it for the money, and I completely understand that. But I could imagine that you still maybe feel some pressure from the potential of other people to try to do something similar.
Yeah, certainly. And I mean, like, there are other people out there doing some similar things, and we love that. We love just seeing the sport grow. You know, competition is not necessarily a bad thing, but at the same time, we want to build the best thing that's out there. And I think we're really committed to, no matter what happens, you know, we're always going to build the best thing. So, you know, if somebody came along and tried to shake up things, I think that we would respond by building something better. And I think that's just kind of how, you know, companies work in general. You know, one gas station opens across the street from the other one and drops their price by 2 cents. Well, guess what? That one's going to drop it by 2 cents the next day too. It's just, that's kind of just how you know, things work. And it's not really something that we're, you know, super concerned with, because like I said, we're trying to build useful tools that people enjoy. And I think if we continue to build stuff that people enjoy, that people will continue to use the app.
Well, and the best part about it is like the proof stands for itself. And even if you have a competitor, I feel like it'd be really hard for just like a marketing campaign to make one better than the other, unless the features were equal. But with having things like the PDGA partnership and the ties to the tour, that's some of a mitigated risk. And that's kind of my segue into like when you were getting together with the tours, like with the Pro Tour and then with the PDGA and all that, did the level of work significantly increase? Were you kind of at a point where you had it kind of rolling a little bit? Was it a change in direction? What was that like?
I would say it was more of a change in direction. So, you know, with anything we do, there's only a certain number of hours that two people can work in 1 week without dying, because you need to sleep and eat and all that stuff. So each time a new opportunity has been presented to us, we've kind of had to just pivot and go full time on that for a while until we can get it done. So like with the PDGA partnership, which it's worth noting that's continuing for 2020. So if you are an active PDGA member, UDisc Pro is free. You link your PDGA account on Profile tab in UDisc. But yeah, so it was a lot of work up front to get that going. And then there will be more work in the future as we continue to more tightly integrate with them. But like I said, we can only work so many hours in a week, so it's not like necessarily, you know, making it more work. It's just kind of, we have to stop working on some other things in order to get that done.
What was the motivation behind the Release Point blog? You've got some, all kinds of different content, lots of articles about courses, which makes a lot of sense. And also stats. You know, what motivated you to want to start that? And I know you've doubled down and you're going to get even more writing from Alex Williamson, who's been kind of your editor now for a year and a half, 2 years. Forgive me, I don't know exactly, but sorry.
Yeah, I said about a year and a half.
Okay, great. So, you know, what made you want to start that, and what are you hoping to do with that this year and beyond?
Yeah, so the reason that we started that was because we have been scoring for all these tournaments, and we've been having people, you know, keep score for so long. So we have all these scores and we weren't doing anything with them besides just letting people look at UDisc Live. And we realized that there were a lot of stories that could be told by running some of those numbers through some code and, you know, being able to tell some of these stories that haven't been told before. And so that was really the motivation for starting it. You know, just to be clear, like, I'm a huge fan of UltiWorld. I love all the stuff that you guys do. And we've always, you know, like, you guys do more kind of news type stuff and tournament coverage. And that's never what the intention is with the Release Point blog. It's always been to tell stories that are focused on stats. And a little bit of story, just, you know, stories for the sake of telling a story too. But it's more stats focused. And, you know, for example, we just finished up a series of the top 10 courses in the world. Where Alex interviewed somebody who either designed the actual course or is very heavily involved with getting the course installed, and we're able to kind of tell some of these unknown stories about some very prestigious courses all around the world, which was very fun for us. And you know, getting to talk to all these really cool people, like
extremely cool,
that were involved. Yeah, like with De La, you know, 40 years ago or whatever, like super cool. Or like for me, being in Minnesota, Blue Ribbon Pines was number 6. And I learned that the trees on hole 4, which is the most iconic hole, the straight 444-foot tunnel shot, those trees were actually planted by the owner of BRP's dad 50 years ago. He planted those trees because he wanted a nice walking path out in the woods.
Wow.
And now it turns, you know, those trees are like one of the most iconic things of one of the most iconic holes in the sport. It's just cool to learn this stuff. And so, you know, it's been really rewarding to have Alex's time to be able to do that. And while we're talking about that, it's worth noting that we named Yarva. So first of all, we're not picking, you know, which courses were the top. There's over 1 million course ratings that people have submitted in the app. And so all we did was ran that through some code to determine the rankings for each of these courses. And Yarva in Stockholm was named the number one course in the world. And It's worth noting that that course, if you don't know, has been at threat of being closed for a while now by the city. And so if you can, you know, go share that article from our social media would be the best place. Share that article about Yerba being number one, because we can just tell you that people are noticing. And there is some momentum there to keep that course open and to stop it from being closed. And, you know, having somebody like us name it as the top course in the world really goes a long way towards getting some of these politicians and whatnot that are involved mm-hmm. in this course closure to pay attention and say, wow, you know, we really do have a gem here. You know, why are we going to close this? This is something that people all over the world love. You know, let's try to fight the fight and keep it going.
It really is crazy for that course how much activism there has been internationally. And it's kind of crazy to me that they're still trying to close it. I don't know. I feel like if Yerba were in the U.S., public pressure, at least at the local level, at like the city level, they would have backed off and not closed it at this point.
Well, and I think there is, you know, sort of a happy ending, at least for right now, is that the course should at least remain open this year. And there's still talks ongoing. And I know the guy that owns the course is he's a big time activist, obviously, because he put over $1 million of his own money into making this course what it is, him and his brother. So there's a lot of activism and there's a lot of people paying attention. And I think it's a more complicated situation than any of us really understand. Just in terms of like, it's public land, and it was kind of like public land that the city kind of said, yep, you can use this to put a course here, but he doesn't actually own the land. So it just gets sort of complicated with who actually owns the land and, you know, what they want to do with the land and who gets to say who does what. So it's a very complicated situation, but I just hope that if we can have a small part in, you know, getting people to pay attention and maybe keeping it open. You know, I still haven't even gotten to go there. The rest of the UDIS team actually did go there last year on the way back from European Open. But I would love to go play there someday, and I hope that I can.
I think I'm going to be in Sweden for an Ultimate tournament this summer, and I absolutely will play Yerba.
Must.
Awesome.
I must. And it's like literally on the itinerary. So.
Yeah, you played it, right, Jamie?
I have, and actually, like, one of my favorite things I've ever done in my career was for Spin TV. It was a project called Save Yerba, where I interviewed Mats Luff and kind of talked to him about the course and went around and he showed me how he cuts out some of the holes and like how he thinks about it. And just that course is special. And I really hope we can, you know, whatever it takes, we find a way to keep that thing in the ground.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I said, I haven't been there yet, but so Dan Reynoso from our team was there with the rest of the team this year. And the thing that he said to me that really stuck out is he was like, even when you're off the fairway, there is no debris on the ground whatsoever. It's like so perfectly manicured that there's not even a pine cone on the ground.
Wow.
Yeah. It's like disc golf's Augusta. I mean, as far as the tournament, like the Masters tournament, USDGC is the most similar to the Masters. But in terms of like courses, Augusta is Yerba, in my mind.
Mm.
Awesome.
Well, yeah, it's a very cool series. It's been a real joy to read that. And Alex Williamson is a great writer. We were sad to lose him a couple years ago to you and PDGA and others. But it's great that he's continuing to have a writing voice in disc golf. So let's change gears a little bit. What can you reveal for our subscribers here? What are some little hidden gems that are coming down the pike for UDisc in whatever areas you're thinking about, whether that's in the app or UDisc Live or whatnot?
Yeah, there's a lot happening. You know, I mentioned last week on the show that we're working on some scoring for leagues. The thing that I didn't mention, which I will give you as this nice Easter egg for your subscribers, is that the league scoring will be live scoring. So it won't just be, you know, a leaderboard that it gets posted at the end. It'll actually be sort of like UDisc Live, where it updates as you're going. It's not going to have the throw tracker to start, at least, but, you know, it will be live scoring. So pretty soon, if there's a league going on and your friends are playing, you'll be able to bring that up while you're at work and you can razz your friend when he gets a bogey.
I love it.
Yep. That's fantastic.
That's what we've always wanted. And, you know, we're moving that direction and we're really happy to finally, you know, we have this platform that we built and we're really happy to finally put some of the cool technology that we picked to use for our platform to use and be able to do some of this stuff in more ways. And, you know, beyond the leagues, of course, there's more happening. I really can't talk about it yet because it's so early that one of the problems we find is, you know, if we tell people like, hey, we're working on this, then you start getting emails like, hey, is it ready? Is it ready? Is it ready? And, you know, unfortunately, being such a small team that we are, we kind of have to focus on one thing at a time and get it completely done and then start on the next thing. It's just, it's too hard for us to work on like four things at the same time anymore. Because all the things we're working on are so big. They're not just, you know, little things that take a week. They're things that take 3 months to build or something like that.
So the league thing, how's that going to work? Is it going to be like a tab in the app, or are leagues going to have to sign up and, you know, like pay for using the service of the, you know, UDisc leagues or whatever you're calling it? How exactly is that going to work?
So a little bit of that is still being figured out. However, what I will say is that for now, the league's going to be kind of like a, you have to apply. If you have a league, you can apply to have your league be scored by UDisc. And that's simply because at first we can't just open it to thousands of leagues at first, because that would be a pretty challenging problem for us to handle with such a small team. So if we suddenly went from having one league to 3,000 leagues the next day, that would be pretty challenging. So yeah, we will have more information about how exactly to do that. But if you, you know, if you are somebody who runs a bunch of leagues and you want to reach out, we're certainly happy to talk with you and get you going on some stuff. In terms of actually scoring, so the person, all you'll do is open the app normally, and you can use, if you go to, there's already an events tab in the app. So the events tab will actually show leagues that are in your area, based on GPS. So it, you know, if there's a league at the course 5 minutes down the street that day, it'll probably be the first thing on the list there. You'll just tap on that and then you can just click on keep score right from there. Or you can just create a scorecard the normal way. And if there's a league happening at that course, it will actually show you at the top, like the layout for the league, and you can just pick that and then play your league back. So there will be a lot more coming with that, and I'm sure that we'll change how some of it works. But for now, that's the idea, and that's how we've been doing it for about a year now as we've been testing.
The feature I'm waiting for is the Razz chat, where I can pay you money to live Razz somebody on another card during this league.
Push notification like them.
Sound. Yeah, in the middle of them putting. Because I know they're on the green and I can give you money and you can make more money so you can go on a vacation and go on a honeymoon and I can Razz my buddy. It's win-win.
Yeah, you know, that would be great. But as I'm sure you know what I'm going to say is that's just going to make people hate us. I would love to be able to do that with my own friends. It's actually funny that you brought that up. So when Apple Watch first came out, I wanted to learn how to build an Apple Watch app. So I bought an Apple Watch, and then the app that I built, it was this really silly thing where your watch had just a list of phrases on it. You could type, so you'd grab your phone, you'd type in a phrase or a sentence, and then the watch would show those, and you'd tap on the watch, it would make your phone speak that phrase no matter where your phone was. So you could go stick your phone like under a Lazy Boy, and then you could hit a button on the watch and the phone would say like, hello, or, you know, whatever you wanted it to say. Like the one that I always did was, I was doing nice shot. And so what I would do is I would take my phone and like put it in my friend's bag while they were throwing. And then I'd walk away and I'd tap on it. So it'd say nice shot, like right after they threw. And then you could kind of nice your friend without texting your friend.
That's awesome.
So, yeah. That was a fun, totally useless app, but it was a good way to learn how to do Apple Watch stuff.
Go
ahead, Jim.
I want this app right now. What do you mean it's useless? Can I get it on the beta version of this new UDisc 2.0? I'm into this.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I think the app still exists in the store, but it's too embarrassing to even tell you the name of it.
I have one last question here. How long until we have nationwide UDisc bag tag league?
Oh, interesting. Yeah, so I mean that is something that we're definitely going to get to. That the league stuff is kind of the first, like the league scoring is kind of the first facet of that. And I'm sure that we'll get to the point where we want to start maybe running some of our own leagues, or I don't even know, like maybe it could be called like a UDisc league or something like that, or we could have like a virtual league or something like that. That would be very fun. That's just kind of like, I would say that's like the 2.0 of this league stuff. So first we just want to be able to help people score and help these poor league directors who spend hours and hours each week totaling up scorecards, help them have a little bit more free time so that maybe they could even run a second league. But yeah, we'll get to that eventually.
Very cool. Well, hey, thank you so much for taking some time, and wish you the best of luck, and we'll see you out there at the course. Are you going to Vegas? Where are you going to be first?
I don't believe I'm going to Vegas. That's a good question. I'm actually not sure the first tournament I'll be at. I think I'll probably be at less this year than I have been. So probably a good chance I'll be at Worlds. That's probably one you can count on. But other than that, I don't really have any plans yet.
Well, that's perfect. That's the schedule. That's my schedule. Worlds USDGC.
Yep.
I'll see you there.
Sounds good. I look forward to it. Maybe we can grab some Mexican food again.
There we go. giant margaritas.
Yep. Always. That was fun.
All right. Thanks so much, Matt.
Yep. Nice talking to you guys.
That's going to do it for our first ever edition of the Upshot subscriber only segment. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you next week.